We'll hear argument now in the case of United States against Suggs. Mr. Horwitz.
May it please the court, my name is Ben Horwitz and I represent the appellant Floyd Suggs. This court should reverse the district court's denial of Mr. Suggs' motion to suppress evidence. The district court erred in three main reasons in its decision. First, the search warrant was insufficiently particular. Second, the warrant was executed unreasonably. And third, there are no exceptions under the Fourth Amendment that excuse law enforcement's conduct. And I'd like to—
Mr. Horwitz, can I ask you a question? If, assume the warrant itself was reasonable, okay? Assume the warrant itself, that there was, that they did sufficient investigation and did not determine that there were two apartments within the building. The officer delivers the package and rings both doorbells, right? That's what happened. Effect. Then the officers enter the building, right? And if there were two apartments, your client has no particular privacy interest in the vestibule of the building or the foyer of the building, right? You agree with me there?
I think the case law is
pretty clear
against
that,
yes.
And then the agents conduct a protective sweep and walk through the first floor apartment and encounter Mr. Suggs in the rear of the apartment in a rear stairwell, correct?
Factually, yes.
Okay. In the district court, you never challenged the legality of the protective sweep. Is that right? You agree with that, right?
I don't think it was fully fleshed out, but.
But where is the, once they encounter Mr. Suggs, if the original warrant was valid, was reasonable, okay, because they did a sufficient investigation and did not determine that there were two apartments. Once they rang the two bells, they were allowed to go into the vestibule. If they were permitted to do a protective sweep of the first apartment, and whether they were or whether they weren't is neither here nor there because it wasn't challenged in the district court. Once they encountered your client with the purple dye on his hands, and your client fled up into the second floor apartment and locked the door, first of all, at that point, don't they know where he lives such that the warrant is valid under Garrison? And even if it wasn't, don't all kinds of exceptions apply, exigent circumstances, inevitable discovery? He had the dye on his hands. They knew who it was. They went to get him. Where am I in that scenario? Where do I fail?
Well, I'd like to address your question as directly as I can, and I think
okay.
the place to start is with exigent circumstances. Now, in this case, it's not disputed that law enforcement had removed any controlled substance. There was no factual allegation that drugs were in either of the units.
Right, but if they would have stopped everything, if they called, say, we got to call the judge, we got to get a new warrant, wouldn't your client have had the opportunity for many minutes and maybe an hour or more to destroy the relevant evidence?
There are not facts to support that there was evidence to be destroyed at that point.
Well, his hands.
And respectfully, and I'm not sure that the science behind this, but my understanding of the purple dye is that it's not something that can be easily washed off. So as far as the exigent circumstances are concerned, there is not the exigency of somebody's physical safety, of somebody in need of medical attention, and I don't believe that there's the exigency of the destruction of narcotics. So the exigent circumstances doctrine does not support entry at that point, and certainly, even in the back stairwell, there is the need to obtain this more particularized and specific warrant.
When they encountered him in the back stairwell and he goes up into the second floor apartment and locks the door, now they know there are two apartments, they only have a warrant for one, basically, they only have a warrant for one apartment where Mr. Suggs lives. Now, why isn't the warrant sufficient for them to enter the second apartment and conduct the search pursuant to the warrant? In other words, why is the warrant invalid at that point?
And that, I think, is the problem with the question, because it condenses the timing and when law enforcement knew what. And this is exactly the execution portion of our argument and why the execution was unreasonable. So even assuming that the investigation was sufficient such that the particularity prong was met, and I'd like to address that later, but a warrant that on its face justifies entry into a single unit building at 11:19 a.m. when Agent Coyote approaches the first doorbell, rings the second doorbell, at that point, there's a reasonable inference, and there is, they knew or they should have known that the place to be searched was not the place authorized for search.
Why? Just based on I have two doorbells. I don't have two I don't have two apartments in my house.
Frankly,
odd thing. I don't know why we have two doorbells. We just do.
And I'm not familiar with the specific facts of your house, but
no, I understand.
But frankly, that's the point, is that would it be reasonable to go to your house and see two doorbells, to ring both doorbells thinking that it was a single family unit, and then to burst down the door under the authority of that warrant? And the answer is no. So what we have, and this is why the execution prong is...
But once they broke down the door, they were just standing in the foyer of the building. There's no there. What's the problem with that?
I think it's instructive to look at a case like Ritter. And in Ritter, the court found that there was a sufficient investigation. The court found that up until a certain point, the execution of the warrant didn't raise any problem. And when law enforcement learned that the place authorized for search was different, of that discrepancy between single unit and multi-unit, it was a question of where they were when they knew that. And the conclusion in that case was they were obligated to stop the execution of the warrant at that point. They were acting under the authority of that warrant. In that case, in Ritter, they were in a common area, but they were still obligated to stay in that common area at that point, and that's what the Third Circuit held in that case. In this case, they're not in the common area at the time that they should have known that the warrant did not authorize search into this building. And we should look to footnote 7 at page 33 of the appendix, in which the district court found that it would have been preferable for law enforcement to apply for a more particularized warrant. However, it's unclear how law enforcement could have known which unit to request an updated warrant for. So to simply ignore the particularity and ignore the investigation, to ignore what happened at 11:19 a.m., to find that it was, I don't know how the court would characterize it, but two doorbells, just like Your Honor's house, that should have raised alarm bells that this was not the place authorized for search. And then to continue with the execution with the battering ram through the front door and into the common area, the question is, was there a constitutional violation preceding that that made the execution of the warrant unreasonable?
But if there wasn't, that's the problem, I think, that you have. If there wasn't, if there was not a constitutional violation preceding their entry into the building, and if your client did not have purple dye all over his hands, the case might be different. In other words, I don't know that there's extras and circumstances if they encounter somebody in the back stairwell and the person in the back stairwell walks up the stairs, goes back into the apartment, and locks the door. I think it's the purple dye on his hands that creates the problem for your client.
And I'm arguing that the constitutional violation preceded that.
Right, right.
So I think the government kind of inaccurately likens the circumstances in this case to both Kelly and Nestor. In Kelly, we have a situation where law enforcement's on the threshold of the door. They go through the door and they're simultaneously able to determine that this place is not the place that's authorized for search, but also they're able to dispel the possibility that they're searching the wrong place. That is not what happens here. The information gathered by law enforcement starting at 11:19 a.m., confirmed by the entirety of the search team through the live stream of the body-worn camera of Agent Coyote and continuing up to the threshold of the door, everything that they learned from there was in the opposite direction of the disparity between the search warrant and the place authorized.
Let's say you're right on that. Let's say they determined immediately that it was a two-building apartment. They rang both doorbells and they realized right away that there were two apartments in the building. Couldn't they have then entered the building? without a warrant. It would have been foolish for them to do that. I mean, the reason they don't generally do that is they don't want to announce their presence, and they don't want to, you know, indicate to people like Mr. Suggs that we're on to you, right? I mean, it would have been a little weird for the agents to break down the door, enter the building, realizing it was a multi-unit building, and then say, well, we can't go any further, so now we're going to leave and come back and get a search warrant, and we'll see you in 3 days. My guess is Mr. Suggs would not have been there. That's my guess. So they usually don't do that. But they could have, right?
I think it's questionable legality for law enforcement to go around. We're starting from the founding. The Fourth Amendment establishes this principle that protects against general searches. And so is law enforcement allowed, under no authority of a warrant, to just batter down the front doors of buildings and hope that it's a common area on the other side of that door? This is law enforcement.
But if it is, what's the problem?
The problem.
There's certainly, they can walk into the lobby of the JW Marriott Hotel today. They can walk into the lobby of the, apartment building in Chicago. They can do that.
Well, I would like to return to particularity at some point, but I'm from there. Even if they get to the back stairwell where they observe Mr. Suggs, purple dye, going into the second floor unit, there still is no exigency. There is no safety risk. There is no narcotics that's subject to destruction, because there are no narcotics known to be in the residence.
I'm a little confused with your exigency argument. It seems like you're saying because they didn't find drugs, there was no exigency. But certainly the package didn't have drugs. But the package itself was evidence. There's reason. I mean, this is a controlled delivery. He has purple dye in his hands, runs upstairs. Are they not to follow him out of fear of destruction of evidence and go get a warrant at that point?
They are to get a warrant at that point. At that point, we have a 15-person law enforcement team blocking each the front and the rear exit to the building. And it would have been preferable, we agree with the district court, it would have been preferable to get a warrant.
And you don't think in that situation there's a risk of destruction of evidence?
Not based on the specific facts at that point. The controlled substance had already been removed. I would briefly, if I could, just return to particularity. As the court is aware, Garrison is the seminal case here. And it was not objectively reasonable based on the information that was known or should have been known to law enforcement prior to the issuance of the warrant to believe that the two flat was a single unit residence. The district court found this to be a close call, but unfortunately it came down on the wrong side of it. So I appreciate the hypothetical in imagining that this was particular. It was, however, not. The lead agent failed to ask the probation officer about the layout of the residence. They failed to look at a publicly available resource like the Cook County Assessor's website, failed to investigate the implications of multiple garbage cans, failed to recognize what I'm sure the court is aware is a standard two flat, and failed to speak with somebody who would have been present on a daily basis at this resident in the postal carrier. The investigation failed to take the opportunity to look into reliable, readily available resources. The opportunity and this information that was available to law enforcement is much stronger than what the case law lays out, which in various cases is a confidential informant, somebody who has a criminal history, is involved in crime, not the reliable individual that would be a federal employee in the probation officer who would have had firsthand knowledge of the layout of the two flat. So for that reason, I would urge the court not to accept that the particularity prong has been met. Particularity and reasonableness have not been satisfied. And I would, unless there are further questions at this point, I would like to reserve some time for rebuttal.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Choi.
May it please the court, Chester Choi on behalf of the United States. The court should affirm the district court's order denying the defendant's motion to suppress. First, here, the search warrant was valid when issued. In the context of this investigation, which law enforcement intercepted a package that contained approximately $20,000 worth of fentanyl pills, his investigation was reasonable. He consulted two Postal Service databases, the CLEAR database, which pulls from multiple sources, and had also identified two residents through the Illinois Secretary of State database who listed their address without a without listing a unit. It also involved a review of exterior photographs, and he also consulted with members of his team who had raised no concerns about the description of the premises. From there, the search was conducted reasonably. Law enforcement entered. They entered the front vestibule area, which is a common area, which they were lawfully and rightfully present. They then conducted a protective sweep. And within 5 to 10 seconds of entering, they heard footsteps on the second floor. And then within 2 minutes of entering, they encountered a defendant who had purple dyed stained hands, was manipulating a bag, and had also ignored law enforcement's commands to stop, and then locked the door of his apartment. So from there, law enforcement had identified the intended recipient of the package, which had contained drugs, and they had also identified the targeted apartment to be searched, and their search was limited to that apartment only. And even if this court were to find that the entry of the second floor was unreasonable, there were exigent circumstances. Again, they encountered the defendant with the purple dyed stained hands. He was the intended recipient of the package. When they searched the apartment, they did indeed find drugs. They found drug paraphernalia. They found wrappings with drug residue around the toilet. And at that point, with all that evidence, a search warrant would have been obtained and the evidence would have inevitably been discovered. If there are no further questions, the government requests that the court affirm the district's order denying the defendant's motion to dismiss.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Horwitz?
Just to follow up on the issue of exigency, it's important to note that the execution of the warrant started at 11:19 a.m. The door was not battered down until 2:30 p.m. The knowledge of the two doorbells, however quirky and whatever inference the court believes can be reasonably drawn from that, there was no further investigation. This case is like Patino, in which there is a decided waiting period, a failure to investigate further, a failure to get more information, a failure to obtain a more particularized warrant and a warrant that accurately authorizes the search of the two flat. And so it is the conduct and the failure to act by law enforcement that the government is now seeking to use to its benefit as far as the exigent circumstances are concerned. So I would ask the court to consider that as well. King directs us that the exigent circumstances doctrine cannot apply following an actual or threatened violation of the Fourth Amendment. The Fourth Amendment was violated starting when the particularity prong was failed to be satisfied, but also as starting at 11:19, the two doorbells were discovered and further information indicated to a reasonable person that this was not the place authorized for search. For those reasons, we're asking the court to reverse the district court's denial of Mr. Suggs' motion to suppress evidence.
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.